the cottage of Lahiri Mahashai and the cottage of Sri Vaishnava Das stood side by side. Nearby were some mango and kantala trees. Small betel plants gracefully enclosed the place on all four sides. In the courtyard was a large circular terrace. The terrace had been there since the days when Prajumna Brahmachari lived there. Many days since then, the Vaishnavas came to call that place Sarabi's Terrace and became accustomed to circumambulate it and offer dandavat obeisances. It was shortly after dusk, sitting on a leaf seat in his cottage. Sri Vaishnav Das chanted the holy names of Lord Hari. It was the dark fortnight. The night was gradually becoming dark. A flickering lamp burned in Lahiri Mahashai's cottage. Seeing a snake at his doorway, Lahiri Mahashai quickly trimmed the lamp and took up a stick to kill the snake. But when he came outside with his lamp, he did not see the snake. Lahiri Mahashai said to Vaishnava Das, take care, a snake has entered your cottage. Vaishnava Das replied, why do you worry about a snake? Come, enter my cottage without fear. Lahiri Mahashai entered the cottage and sat on a leaf seat. Still his mind was agitated about the snake. He said, O noble-hearted one, Shantipur is very good in this way. It is a city, and there is no fear of snakes or other dangers. In Nadia there is always fear of snakes, especially Godruma and the other forest places. It is hard for a gentleman to live in those places. Sri Vaishnav Das Babaji replied, O Lahiri Mahashai, it is foolish to let the mind be agitated over these things. You must have heard the story of Maharaj Parikshit in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Giving up all fear of snakes, with an unagitated mind, he heard nectar descriptions of Lord Hari from the mouth of Srila Sukadev Goswami. In this way, he attained transcendental bliss. No snake can kill a man's spiritual body. The spiritual body is bitten only by the snake of separation from hearing the nectar topics of the Supreme Lord. The material body... is not eternal. Some day you must give it up. One may do everything to maintain his material body. Still, whenever Lord Krishna wills, that material body will certainly collapse, and one will not be able to protect it. If the time of one's death has not yet come, one may even sleep beside a snake, but the snake will not harm him. Therefore, one who gives up fear of snakes or other dangers may be called a true Vaishnava. If it is afraid of every danger, the mind will always be restless. How can a restless mind always think of Lord Hari's lotus feet? Therefore, one should abandon all fear of snakes and all attempts born from that fear to kill snakes. Becoming a little faithful, Lahiri Mahashai said, O saintly one, your good words have made my heart fearless. I know that only a person with a noble heart is qualified to obtain the final goal of life. The great souls who stay in mountain caves and worship the Lord there are never afraid of wild animals. On the contrary, it is because they fear the association of materialistic persons that they voluntarily live in the forest surrounded by wild animals. The saintly Babaji then said, when Bhakti Devi, the goddess of devotional service, appears in someone's heart, that heart naturally becomes exalted. The whole world loves such a person. Saints and ruffians alike, everyone loves a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, every human being should become a Vaishnava. Hearing this, Lahiri Mahashai said, you have given me great faith in the eternal religion. The Vaishnava religion is very close to the eternal religion. That is my belief. I am not convinced that the Vaishnava religion is completely identical with the eternal religion. Therefore, I ask you to tell me what you think of all this. Vaishnava Das Babaji then said, In this material world, two different religions are called by the name the Vaishnava religion. One is the pure Vaishnava religion, and the other is the contaminated Vaishnava religion. The pure Vaishnava religion is one, although it is divided into four according to the different rasas. Thus, there is the Vaishnava religion in servitorship, dasya, a Vaishnava religion in friendship, shakya, a Vaishnava religion in parental love, vatsalya, and a Vaishnava religion in conjugal love, madhurya. Still, the pure Vaishnava religion is one, it is not many. The eternal religion and the transcendental religion are merely other names for the Vaishnava religion. The Shruti Shastra declares, Yajjyatam sarvam vijyatam bhavati. By understanding the Supreme, one comes to understand everything. These words refer to the Vaishnava religion. This truth will gradually be revealed to you. The contaminated Vaishnava religion is of two kinds. One, Vaishnava religion contaminated by fruit of work, karma. And two, Vaishnava religion contaminated by the impersonalist fallacy, jnana. The activities of the Vaishnava religion as conceived by the smarta pandits are the Vaishnava religion contaminated by fruit of work. Although it includes initiation and chanting of Vishnu mantra, this conception of the Vaishnava religion belittles the all-pervading Supreme Personality God and makes him subordinate to fruit of work. According to these people, even though he is the master of all demigods, Vishnu is merely a part of the process of karma and is himself subject to the laws of karma. Thus, karma is not subordinate to the will of Vishnu, but Vishnu is subordinate to the will of karma. According to them, all worship and spiritual practices are merely various aspects of fruit of work, and therefore nothing is higher than fruit of work. This form of Vaishnava religion, according to the conception of the Mimamsaka philosophers, has existed for many days. In India, many follow this idea, and they claim to be Vaishnavas. They do not accept the pure Vaishnavas to be Vaishnavas at all. Such is the misfortune of the Mimamsakas. Vaishnava religion contaminated by impersonal philosophy is also prevalent in India. According to the impersonalists, in order to attain the qualityless impersonal Brahman, one should worship Surya, Ganesh, Shakti, Shiva, or Vishnu. Then one attains perfect knowledge. He can discard the form that he had worshipped. Then at the end he attains the qualityless impersonal Brahman. Accepting these ideas, many persons dishonor the pure Vaishnava religion. The worship of Lord Vishnu is included in the impersonalist worship of five deities, Surya, Ganesh, Shakti, Shiva, or Vishnu, as described above. And that worship includes initiation, deity worship, and other aspects of devotion to Lord Vishnu. Sometimes it may even include the worship of Shishi Radha Krishna. Still, this is not the pure Vaishnava religion. The pure Vaishnava religion is different from these kinds of contaminated Vaishnava religion. It is the true Vaishnava religion, because the defects of Kali Yuga, many people do not understand what is the pure Vaishnava religion. They think these varieties of contaminated Vaishnava religion are the true Vaishnava religion. The worshippers of the Paramatma, Supersoul, wish to meet the Supersoul, desiring to enter a mystic trance, and there meet the Supersoul. They engage in Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, or Astanga Yoga. According to these people, initiation into chanting Vishnu mantras, worship of Lord Vishnu, meditating on Lord Vishnu, and other kinds of devotional service are all various aspects of Karma Yoga. Among these people, Vaishnava religion, contaminated by fruit of work, is manifested. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the most fortunate persons are attracted to pure devotional service, service to the pure form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such persons engage in deity worship and the other activities of devotional service. These activities of devotional service are not subordinate aspects of Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, or the speculations of the impersonalists. Rather, they are aspects of pure devotional service. These activities are the pure Vaishnava religion. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.11 explains, Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. One should see in this way the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not different from either the Paramatma or the impersonal Brahman. Is the highest, the final manifestation of the Supreme. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Vishnu, who is supremely pure. Individual spirit souls that become his followers are also pure. The activity of such pure souls is called bhakti, devotional service. Hari Bhakti, devotional service to Lord Hari, is also called by the names Shuddha Vaishnava Dharma, pure Vaishnava religion, Nitya Dharma, eternal religion, Jiva Dharma, duty of individual souls, Bhagavat Dharma, religion of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramartha Dharma, way to attain the final goal of life, Paradharma, highest religion, religions that strive to attain the Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are all temporary religions. The material motive pushes one to seek the impersonal Brahman. Therefore, the religion of the impersonal Brahman is materially motivated and temporary. It is not eternal. The individual soul trapped in the material world is eager to escape his material bondage. To escape this material bondage, the soul searches for the impersonal Brahman. In this way, it takes shelter of a religion that is both temporary and materially motivated. Therefore, the religion of seeking the impersonal Brahman is not eternal. Seeking the happiness of rapt meditation, samadhi, a soul may take shelter of the religion of seeking the Paramatma. Thus, seeking a more subtle kind of material pleasure, he follows a temporary religion based on material motive. Therefore, the religion of seeking the Paramatma is not eternal. The religion of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead is alone eternal. Hearing these words, Lahiri Mahashaya said, please describe to me the pure Vaishnava religion. I am advanced in years. I take shelter of your feet. Please be merciful and accept me. I have heard it said that a person previously initiated and instructed by an unworthy person should find a worthy teacher and accept initiation and instruction from him. For some days I have heard your instructions, and now I have faith in the Vaishnava religion. Please be merciful. Teach me the Vaishnava religion, and when your teaching is concluded, initiate me and purify me. So we have to be very careful because all these religions, because of the aspect of karma and the jnana, they may look very similar. Many times, you know, anything that's a little bit close, you know, like McDonald's serves a veggie burger, then we'll say, oh, see, McDonald's is very nice, very close to us, like this, you know. So we have to be careful. It's just because they get initiation, they have Vishnu mantra, they do worship of Vishnu, doesn't mean that they're actually Vaishnavas, right? It may look like it. They're worshiping Vishnu. They're going through Vishnu to get to what they want. But they're actually not. They're opportunists. They're not actually surrendered to Vishnu. So they cannot be called Vaishnavas. You know? I mean, it's, in one sense, it's better that they go. Bhagavatam recommends that they want karma or they want jnana, then better to go to him. like that, since they're going to do that, then he's the one that's going to fulfill the desires anyway, no one else. So you might as well go directly to him. And that's better. And he'll give and it'll be an easier way of doing it. Like that. So we see that there are these persons, the smartas, they may in their worship the Supreme Lord. But their whole point is that he's controlled by the laws of karma also. You did your work, you must get the result. Right? We have our independent free will whether we want to do the work or not. But once the work is done, God doesn't have the free will whether he wants to give you a result or not, or how he'll give you a result. Like that. It's just karma is going on. We're caught up in this cycle of karma. And so it just works like this. This is their idea. So we have to be very careful to not to understand that at any time the living entity can step out of the cycle of karma. And the Lord can step out. Stepping out means we're not attached to. That doesn't mean the reactions of what we've done before are not going to come. Sometimes we may think this, is that because we've taken up devotional service, previous reactions won't come. So therefore everything should be very nice, like the heavenly planets. So if anything bad comes, then we wonder, how is this possible? Why can this come? You know, I'm a devotee. What is Krishna doing? Why this is going on? But the point is this is just a reaction from what's come before. So how one steps out is that one doesn't care about it. So who cares if it comes or not? And whatever the situation, one will use it to remember Krishna. Like the Pandavas, we see that they lost everything, but it only enhanced their remembrance of Krishna and engaging in Krishna's service. So therefore, it was a fine situation, no problem. They didn't care that they were in the forest. Right? That's not a problem. So therefore, it was helpful. But if they're attached, then naturally it'll be a problem. When these problems come up, it will be a problem for them. But if one's not attached, then there's no problem. Right? So the problem we create due to our attachment. There's no attachment, there's no problem. Right? It doesn't mean that the body is not going through some difficulty, or there's not situations that come up that can create difficulty for the mind. It just means that you're not attached to it, so therefore it doesn't bother you. Right? If you're attached to something, if something happens to that thing, we're very disturbed. If we're not attached to something, and something happens to it, what do you care? You know? Right? Just like one reads in the newspaper, so many people, become unfortunate in Gujarat. Earthquake, lose their homes, families, this, that, and so many things we read, very difficult, this and that, and then we move on. Yeah? It doesn't really bother us because we're not involved in it. You know, if it's our house that falls down and our family members that are trapped inside and our wealth that's being taken by the dacoits and everything, then somehow or another it has a different significance. And it's why the whole world is not, coming forth to help and this and that and so many things. But if we're not involved, the attachment's not there. So the same way is that our own stuff, I mean, it's very easy to not be attached to someone else's things. Okay. But to not be attached to those things that we are in our care, that's more difficult. So if that is there, then we're not disturbed by what happens. Because what happens is the Lord's, that's just the way things will go. We follow our duties, do the best we can to take care of everything. If it goes nicely, great. If it doesn't, then it's lost. It is that we cannot be attached like that. It will happen how the Lord wants it to happen. Like that. So therefore, karma, that's how one steps out of karma. Right? And that can be done at every moment. Externally, it looks like we're still involved, but we're not. The same way as Krishna may be the one sanctioning, but that's according to his free will. Right? So things are going on. Generally you do some work and then he gives you the result. But it's up to him. And he's the one that set the rules how it works anyway. He made the game. So it's not that he's bound by it. He made it up. So therefore, he made it the way he likes to run it. So it's not that he's controlled by it. He's just running it the way he wants to run it. He makes the rules. So he's not controlled by it. Right? He just operates it the way he wants it to be operated. In fact, he doesn't even have to run it himself. Maya is taking care of everything. Like that. She does the management. Like that. Then the imperson, so even though they are following all these things, one has to be careful is that they're not pure Vaishnavas. And then the impersonalists, and they worship these five different kinds of in their mind, demigods, you know, Vishnu being one of them. So then, even though they may choose as their main deity Vishnu, or some form of Vishnu, and receive mantra in there and initiation and do worship and all that, eventually then their ideas, when they actually become realized, then they become the deity. So they don't have to, they don't need the deity anymore. You know, they become, you become that, so therefore, you know, I mean, you can go on worshipping yourself if you like, you know, it's, you know, some, you know, take pleasure in, but otherwise there's no necessity, you know, it's just your lila if you do that. But otherwise it's not. So they're also not Vaishnavas. Though it looks like it, they follow different rules, they may follow, you know, the different ways of worship, may take initiation, may chant Vishnu mantra, but that's not their purpose. So both these. And then the yogis, then they are also desires to see the super soul, but for the purpose of merging. So it's their own desire. They want to fulfill their own happiness. Vishnu is not included in the happiness. There's no service. So even though it looks like they're meditating on the Lord, they are, but they're doing it for their own selfish motives. It's not as service to the Lord. So therefore all these are material. They'll be temporary. Like that. They will not give any satisfying results. So they're not the pure Vaishnava religion. These are impure. So the pure Vaishnava religion means we want to establish a relationship with Krishna in a particular rasa to serve him, you know, in that rasa. That's the pure Vaishnava religion. So that is the eternal religion. So that's what's being described here. And then this Lahiri Mahashai, hearing these things, now he's convinced of the Vaishnava religion, so he wants to hear more instruction, he wants to be initiated into this and then practice. So we see the essence here is by the instructions he has taken shelter. Right? By the instructions he has gained faith. And then the relationship between him and the spiritual master is based on instruction. So this is the proper method or the proper approach to Vaishnava initiation and the whole process, because it's the instructions that's going to take us back to Godhead. So that instruction, that knowledge, these are the things that are the dynamics of the relationship. So that's what the relationship should be based on. If it's based on that, then we find everything works very nicely. If it's based on something else, it may be nice, but the problem is the sentiment changes. Right? From one day to the next. It's not steady. Because the sentiment then is based on the mind. Right? Like that. So there has to be a better foundation than that. It's not steady. So, therefore, one should be very careful. It's not some other reason that one is wanting to take initiation. You know, just everybody else has got initiation. You know, tired of, you know, our name, and we want some other kind of name, you know, get one of these neat Indian names, you know, or, you know, if we get, you know, another, you know, we get second initiation and we can do all those things with the deities, you know, all these technical little rules and all this and that. So that's not, you know, it may be part, it may be an attraction, But that's not the whole purpose. The purpose is to gain that direction by which one can go back to Godhead. That is the main thing. That is there. So the instruction is the most important. So if that is there, then that becomes important. So this one can test. When the spiritual master gives instruction, can we follow? Right? And then that is a good relationship. If it's just simply we want to do some kind of worship only, means that's how we show, that's the only way we show our relationship, you know, a big Vyas Puja ceremony or this service or that service, and that's all, then it's nice, it's recommended, but that's only part of it. That's not the major part, that's the smallest part. Because that part you can do sometimes, but not all the time. But the thing is can one follow instruction? So instruction has to be the basis of the relationship. Then we'll find it always works. Otherwise we may find that we're very enthusiastic in the beginning, and then we find the spiritual master starts giving us instructions and we don't like to follow those instructions. Then what's the meaning of the relationship? Right? So that's very important. So we see here is that he's mentioning that. Yeah, he hasn't been initiated yet. So that's the point he made. For some days I have heard your good instructions, and now I have faith in the Vaishnava religion. Please be merciful. Teach me the Vaishnava religion, and when your teaching is concluded, initiate me and purify me. So in other words, we should be trying to hear instruction. And based on that, then the faith should be there. And then we should understand how to operate the system. Right? Then the initiation will have some meaning. Because initiation is part of the operational part. It means it is sambandha that's connected, but it's for the purpose that you can then are qualified to work within the system. Like that. So therefore instruction is the important thing. You know? But of course then after that instruction continues, it's not that there. But it's like, in other words, you teach what it is, and then when that's concluded and that's understood, then we take initiation. But it will continue because it never ends. You can refine. At least the essence is there, you understand it, you like it. This is what you want. And then one does it. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. The main point I'm just trying to make is that the siksha aspect of relationship with the guru is the most important. Right? Someone who can establish a proper siksha relationship with, that's a person that one then establishes diksha with. Right? That's how it works. It's not that you establish diksha and then you see if you can make a siksha relationship work. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But it should be the other way around. You establish the siksha, then when the siksha is established, then is the diksha. Like that. Then it makes life very easy. Otherwise, then people end up in embarrassing situations. Yes?
I want to ask about the previous topic, that you were saying that the religion not leads to Krishna, to Supreme Personal Godhead, like the Supreme World, and is not a Nitya religion. But sometimes we see like Madhva's followers, like they actually go into that aim, but they don't want the mercy too quick, so then they go through all the brothers and sisters, they go first to this.
They go through?
Go to all the brothers and sisters, first they go to Svarga Loka, then after they go into Brahma Loka, then from there they go into Vaikuntha Loka. And they go through
many steps. That's their philosophy.
Yeah, but they usually go through like many steps. They're going slowly, not taking that one last time we go back to Goloka Vrindavan and that's all. They're going slowly. So that's how I would call that one. Because it leads to the same goal, but it's very slow.
Yeah,
so.
Just... when they're leaving the material universe, then they're basically taken on tour of the universe, just to make sure that there's nothing here that you want to check out before going back to Godhead. Because if there is something, then you may be in anxiety about that. You'll be back in Vaikuntha and wonder, why I didn't stop in on, you know, Brahmaloka or something, you know, or Indra's planet, and, you know, like that. So that's then a problem. So therefore one goes by all these places to make sure there's nothing here you want. You know, and you go through the Brahman nicely, and, you know, all these things. You're shown all these things. And if you don't want any of this, then no problem. Then you go back to Godhead. But otherwise, because the point is if you want, then you get off at these places, check it out, tour around, you know, spend some time, and then, you know, from there, then go on. So I guess just they've just planned it that way, that they're going to make these stops, you know, before going. You know, so it can be done. But why waste time? We see even in there, even in the scriptures that they value, you see people going back to Godhead and they don't bother with that. They don't bother with stopping. Right? Like that. Unless their stopping is just to touch down, look around, get back in and go or something. But what's to say that you won't get attracted by something? You know? So it's not recommended. Vaishnava religion, but it's just, you know, why waste your time? Right? It's just like, we want to see, but what about Krishna? He wants us to come back. So then the point comes down to is which is more important, us seeing or, you know, his anxiety. But the point is if you actually want to see, then better you see. But if you're really intelligent, why would you want to see? There's nothing here. You've already done it. It's not that it means devotees means they've already done all those things. So it's not that it hasn't been done. You know. We've done all those things, but and therefore we're tired of it. We've done everything what you can do in karma and gotten all the results of karma. We've done everything in jnana and yoga and gotten the results of those. But we've not been satisfied. So everything's been tried. So therefore, you know, all situations, all species of life, everything. So therefore then, why bother? We just are interested to go back to Godhead. Make sense?
He explains that these four sampradayas are in different four rasas. So
no, not necessarily. No, he was saying he was mentioning the different Vaishnava religion based on the rasa. It's the service. Religion is like a code of activities that give a certain result, right? Like that. So the point is that you want to serve the Lord in a certain way, you have a certain attraction, therefore there's a certain code of activities that you do. You know? Like that. Like cowherd boys, they, you know, see Krishna and come running up to him and they can embrace him right there in public. Gopis can't do that. Right? Gopis go out in the middle of the night to see Krishna. Cowherd boys don't do that. So therefore, the cowherd boys' religion is different from the cowherd girls' religion. But the religion is one, because the point is it's all service to Krishna.
So it's like that, like, Sri Vaishnavas are in one rasa?
No, it's Sri Vaishnavas are in Vaikuntha rasa. Like that, also the Madhvas, they're both Vaikuntha rasa. Like that, they're both. Like that. But the Sri Vaishnavas won't have anything to do with demigods. You know, at all. So therefore probably they're not also interested in stopping at any of their planets on the way out. You know, they won't look at them, offer obeisances to them, say their name, nothing, you know, so they just stay away from them. While the Madhvas, they have no problem in worshipping the demigods as servants of the Lord. So therefore, since they're devotees, what's the problem in stopping on their planets and, you know, checking the place out? So, like that, then it'll be different. But they're both Vaikuntha. Like that. And then the Kumaras, or the Nimbarkas, they worship Radha Krishna. And then the Vishnu Swami, I don't know who means with Vallabha, then they're parental vessel. Like that, but I'm not sure before Vallabha if that was also their line.
Always getting results from previous activities. Sometimes I think that we don't have actually any choice to choose something, no free will. It's always you're becoming involved in pious or impious activities, and you cannot accept or reject anything, just coming. So there is free will.
Let us say you go to the restaurant and you order a dosa, right? Now, 5 minutes later, a dosa comes. So then, what do you feel about that? Do you feel that your independence is being infringed upon because they're forcing this dosa upon you? Or do you see it that I ordered the dosa, so now it's coming, so therefore it is due to my free will? You understand? So the point is we've done so many things. Not everything has been done in this life. So in last life we've done all these things. Therefore the results are coming in this life. And so when they come, they're just part of what we wanted to do in last life. The results we wanted.
Can we reject something or not possible?
Means what is coming you can't really reject. But what you do with it, that's your free will.
What you can do, what choice you can
do. Yeah, means now when that dosa comes, that dosa coming is because of your previous activities, so that's your karma. And now your free will is you can eat that, or you can just leave it there on the table, or you can take it and throw it out the window, or you can do so many things with it. That's your free will.
Dosa is good karma. If something bad coming and you can see that it's not good for you, and actually you don't want it,
but you wanted it before.
Yeah, you wanted it before, maybe, but not.
Yeah, just like you robbed a bank. That means you want to be put in jail. That's the other side of it. They go together. Just like you want to eat, that means you want your stomach to be full. It means you want to go to the toilet. They all go together. It means you can't get only half of a chicken. The chicken comes, it's a complete package, you know, front and back. So the good and bad come together. You can't get away from that. There's nothing good, and there's nothing fully good, and there's nothing fully bad in the material world. So the whole thing comes. The point is what comes is not the problem. It's what you do with it. Like the Pandavas are sent to the forest. What do they do with it? They use it to remember Krishna. Therefore, it's very wonderful. Right? Like, how much of the Mahabharata is about them sitting very nicely on the throne as lords of Bharatvarsha? And how much of it is their problems in the forest and the battle of Kurukshetra and all their difficulties? Right? So when everything's going wonderful, you know, what's to hear about? It's how they deal when there's so many difficulties in that. That's more exciting. Right? I don't know if, you know, you have a thing, a unique phenomena called a soap opera. Right? And they're very popular not because everything's going so wonderful. Right? Because there's problems. Right? Newspapers, why are people bothering them? oh, this, today this nice thing happened, and that today that nice thing happened. No, it's because it's all disasters. Therefore, people are buying. So problems aren't the problem. It's what we do with the problem. That which makes it a problem or not a problem. So the results, the free will is what we do with it. And what we do with it, that's what creates the next karma. Right? So how we deal with the previous result is our free will, and that creates the next reactions that we're going to get. So free will is always there, and receiving the fruits of your previous activities is always there. So now if you take whatever comes and you only use it for Krishna, therefore the results in the future are only going to be connected to Krishna. That's why if we use it for some other material purpose, then in the future we're still going to start getting material results. So if one stops doing that by one's free will, one's actually stopped the karma. Results are still coming, but nothing new is being created. There is no new karma. So free will is always there. You know? Because we're not complaining when somebody comes along and just, you know, walks up to us and hands us an envelope and says, you know, here, I thought I'd give you this, $100,000, and got nothing to do with it. I don't know, can you use it? And, you know, walks off, and somebody comes along and says, hey, you know, I'm leaving Mayapur, I got this flat, I don't know what to do with it. You want it, you know? I mean, you know, like that. Or, you know, those we would say, hey, wow, this is great. But if the opposite happens, then we're going, hey, I don't want this. Why this is coming? Where's my free will? But if good things are happening, then we're thinking, hey, this is great, fine. We're enjoying. So it's just, you know, that's just the way it is. Somebody's doing good, whatever it is. They're at a party, or they're acting, or something where they're public, or they're doing something and things are going really well for them. Every day they do the same thing. And it's drudgery. Now it's going well. You know, they're on a roll, they're on fire, they're hot, you know, all these terms. But that means they're not in control. It's just happening. But because they're proud, they think it is them. And so then they're taking it, they enjoy that. And then when things aren't going well, then they get upset and, you know, what's this, that, and why things are going this way. Does that make some sense? Like that. So free will is always there. But the point is this, just if we remember Krishna or if we don't. You know, and if we use the results that we've gotten from the past according to Krishna's direction, you know, that's our free will to do that. Or we can use it according any other way we want. You know. And basically how would you say? There's 8,400,001 ways to use things. Mm. Right? The one is for Krishna, and the 8,400,000 are for different nice situations in the material world. So free will is actually quite varied. You know, you have 8,400,000 ways you could use it. And then there's, you know, details within that. You know, if you want to be a big pig or a small pig or a house pig or a wild pig there's a lot of options, you know, or which continent you want to live on. You know, you want to be an Indian pig or a European pig or an African pig or a Vietnamese pig. Boy, those are far out pigs. You know, like that. Friendly, but pretty far out. So, like that, then, you know. So, even within the 8,400,000, you have a lot of variety. So then there's plenty of scope for free will.
Sometimes when you're acting accordingly to your nature, you're not thinking what you're going to get from this. You're not thinking that, oh, I want to be big. You're just acting according to your nature. It seems like nature is maybe forcing you to act. You have some qualities. You got this body, this mind, and you are thinking accordingly, and you are getting results accordingly. So, you know, not so much free will, actually. I don't see anything.
You don't see anything. So, was it your free will to order the dosa or not?
Yeah, I was.
And so when you ordered it, then when it comes, is it an infringement upon your individual rights that it is the waiter brings it to you? Or it's not, it's just part of, means you desire it this moment, it doesn't come this moment. It takes a little time to fructify. So in the time that it takes to fructify, when the result does come, is that against your free will? Or it's just a completion of a process you started? So if we performed activities, means by our mind and desires and all that, then it says that your body, then a group of senses then become manifest around that mind. Mind means what you desire, what you want, what you don't want. That's all the mind does. I want this, I don't want that bus, that's all. So you've created that, you have that mentality. Senses then group around that. And the body then is what holds those senses together. Right? So then, in this lifetime, if one thinks and acts like a pig, you know, then that must mean previously we had the mentality that was going in that direction. Therefore, we had, in this lifetime, we get a mentality that thinks and acts like a pig, but is human, and the next lifetime then we'll be a pig. Right? So we've done that. It's just, it's bigger picture. If you want to take only this lifetime and try to understand everything, then it's very difficult. We have to understand the eternal nature of the soul. So over many lifetimes, because sometimes some karma, the reactions are so strong, it may last for many lifetimes. You know, just like an animal, you kill an animal not according to religious principles, then for every hair on the animal's body, one is going to take birth and be killed. So, you know, especially, you know, depending on the size of the animal. On our head, there's about 1 lakh of hairs, average, 100,000. So you can imagine that the animals, I mean, unless it's a real small animal, then they're quite hairy, you know, quite hairy. So then in that hairiness, that's going to take a lot of lifetimes to do. So we had the free will to kill the animal. So that means then we also, you know, are going to receive results. But that may take many, many lifetimes. So some things it's immediate, some things are more quick, some things take longer. It just depends upon what it is.
So I can see under the free will that anyway, better peacefully to take any situation, whatever is coming, just to try to remember Krishna and try to follow something, whatever is possible.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's when you are trying to change situation, you are getting more troubles, more struggles.
No, because the situation has come from before. Right? That's come from before, so that can't be changed. I mean, you can change your order, but you are have a dosa on the table and the waiter expects you to pay for it.
You don't have free will to throw the dosa because some desire is there from previous something.
So, but that's your desire to do it. It's your desire to do it. Any moment you can decide not to accept anything. Right? It's due to our own attachment. This moment one can just give up all desire. But generally that takes practice. You know, you've been here a long time, it's taken a long time to accumulate all these desires, it'll take some time to get rid of it. Some comment? Or?
No, about this sentence in question. But it need maybe like Krishna's mercy, devotee's mercy for it? You need a devotee's mercy or Krishna's mercy for it? Because like they say, when somebody says, okay, I'm going to smoke now, so then first he just buys a cigarette. The second choice
first he has to have money to buy the cigarette.
Yeah. Yeah. Then when he buys a cigarette, then he has only after two choices. Second time, and he has to smoke it again because he will, let's say, be thirsty for it. He always wants to smoke cigarette. So he wants two choices. He buy this kind of cigarette or that kind of cigarette. He has no any more choice to buy cigarette or not buy cigarette. Because it's just the whole thing is
just. Yeah, but you've started it. It's just like the point is someone's on a building and they jump off. So while they're in the air, then they can complain about their free will on being forced to hit the ground. I mean, they made the choice to jump. It may take a little time between where they jump from and where they stop.
Or maybe they know they're going to complain. That's the problem. Sometimes they didn't actually complain.
Because people are only complaining. The question only comes up if things are bad. No one is complaining when it's good. No one's complaining. When there's money, things are happening, they're appreciated, and everything's going their way, no one is complaining. They're only complaining when it doesn't go their way. So when their material desires are being fulfilled, it's great. When the material desires aren't being fulfilled, hey, this is not bad, why this is being forced upon me, I don't want this. That's the thing. So these are just coming from previous desires. And when you do something, along with the desire, we desire to do it, it creates the future desire to do it. Right? That's what's called kutaj. Means in the four things, you have the bija, kutaj, pulanmukha, and prarabdha, karmas. The bija is the seed. So when you want to do something, or you do it, then the seed's planted. Then that will give, then that creates a plant. And that plant then gives the fruit. Right? So the plant almost ready to give the fruit, that's the pulanmukha. Means it's right there, it's ready to happen. You know, the street is there, the street light is there, the Mack truck is there, you are there, you know, and you just happen to step out in the street when the Mack truck comes by and it runs you over. So everything's just ready. So when it runs you over, that's the fruit. Right? But the seed has been planted before, you know, when you were a little kid in your bicycle and you were riding over the frogs. So, therefore, it is going. But along with that comes another thing. It's called kutaj, which means the desire to do that again. So when you do some activity, like a sensual activity, you're going to get the result from that activity. But you're also going to create the desire to do that activity again. That's why the more you do it, the more the desire is there. So it's not worth it. You want to control the situation, therefore you don't take advantage of a situation that comes up. You have the opportunity to do, but you don't do. You could smoke, you don't. You know? You could do something, but you don't. Opportunity is there, courtyard is there, it's full of people, you could go in there and start talking the latest politics, you don't. Then those desires will be controlled and it will go away. And then those results don't come anymore. After a while, they're not going to come anymore. You know, and you'll find yourself in situations other than, you know, every time you turn around the corner, then there's a bunch of devotees talking politics. You'll start finding that you come around the corner and there's some devotees talking about Krishna, or, you know, doing some serious bhajan, or a situation comes up in which you can do some serious, you know, study or chanting or reading or preaching. Like that. But from your previous activities, those situations will come. Right? So, just that we have the situations, the mind, the nature of the mind, the body, the intelligence, the ego, it's all just coming from before. We did activities, so we have that now. The facilities, the opportunities, all that's from previous. You know? Then what we do with it, that's up to us. Means we can't not do anything. We have to do something. So therefore we take the nature and according to Krishna's direction, act. Right? And if we do that for Krishna, then those actions aren't going to give material reaction. Means, yeah, we'll give material reaction. Does that make sense?
So it's correct to say that by developing the mode of goodness, we increasing our free will? Like Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that the ignorance is like an embryo in the womb and the tree. And
It's creating broader options. But at the same time, is the mode of goodness still has to be given up, because it still contains passion and ignorance. There's still false ego and there's still material desire. So the highest forms of that may be desire to see the Paramatma impersonal, or realization, or desire to go to the heavenly planets, so therefore one performs all religious activities. One may be situated very nicely in goodness, but the material desires are still there. That's why material goodness is not enough. It's the best platform, because then it doesn't contain material motives and ignorance, bewilderment. But it's still not in itself a safe position. Only devotional service is actually safe.
Because I was thinking, like Mataji said, that someone can really complain, like, for example, the tree can really complain that doesn't have a free will,
No, but before they did something to become a tree. That's the thing, is if you take right now, if all there is this second, but that's the point, is people nowadays want instant result, right? Today you have a desire for a house, today I have to have a house, right? So there's businessmen that have figured this out. People are so foolish that they're willing to do that. Okay, now the guy wants a house, right? So he's going to work a long time. And he's going to get money, and he's going to buy a house. Okay? But if he does that, let's say it'll cost him $20,000. But he has to have all the self-control, that that desire to work, and the steadiness to do the work, has to have a plan, a vision, so many nice qualities. But then you sell his house for $20,000. Now we make a plan. Oh, you want a house? You can get it today. We'll give you a special loan and all this thing. You pay it back over, so many years. It only costs you so much per month. Sounds really great. But the house costs $30,000.
Right? Same with car.
And we have bought into it. Right? Because it's instant sense gratification. So we have to be very careful that, because we've grown up in this contaminated culture, is now everybody's subjected to. We have to be very careful that we don't apply that on the spiritual life. Is that immediately all bad things should go away? Good things should be there, but bad things should go away. Right? If I have a nice house and they build a nice park there and everything works nicely and I don't, like that, then, whatever I want then happens, then it's great. But if things don't go the way I like it, then it's not so great. And I thought spiritual life meant everything went perfect. I became a devotee because life was miserable. So now I become a devotee, now that means life is supposed to be happy. Happiness means, money, facility, position, prestige, all these things. I didn't have them before, so therefore now spiritual life means I should get them. Right? Just like the impersonalist means I tried to enjoy all this, relationships and all that, and that was my endeavor for material enjoyment. So now I couldn't get that. I take up spiritual life. So it's the opposite. There's no form, there's no taste, there's no touch, there's no... Right? This is where it comes from, is that means whatever we consider as material life, spiritual life is the opposite of that. Right? Like that. But it is opposite in its motive and all these things. But in form, it may not be the opposite. So that's the thing. Well, why are people taking up religion? Right? You'll be a good Christian, what's going to happen? What is the result of being a good Christian?
Jesus will save you.
Yes, Jesus will save you. And then after he saves you, then?
You go to heaven.
Yes, you go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And what will happen in heaven?
Happiness.
Yes. I mean, they don't talk too much about it. You get your own cloud, and you get a pair of wings, and you get a halo, and I think you get... Right? you never hear about what goes on there, just they're all sitting around and singing and stuff like that. You know? And if you don't go to heaven, then what happens?
Go to hell.
Yeah, you go to hell, and then what happens there?
Then forever. They stay forever.
Yeah, and what happens there forever? Yeah, you burn, and it's, you know, it's not a nice situation. Right? Unpleasant situation. So therefore, that's the motive, right? That's what they, and what did the Jews say?
Right?
The fire's
been on for 10 minutes. I don't know what your
backup
system is like.
Yeah, I think it's,
what
is this, charged?
It's current,
isn't it? Yeah, no, it's charging.
Slow.
No, but it's going on. It's still good. It's okay. You know, Jews say the same thing. Muslims say the same thing, just they throw in some green couches like that, you know. Christians have clouds and the Muslims get green couches. Green embroidered couches. Like that. Right? Isn't it? Impersonalists, what's their thing? Material world's so terrible, so you're going to go to a place where nothing's terrible. There's no material problems, right? Right? Voidism is also, you know, all this is nuts, it's nothing. So it'll just all go away. Right? It will extinguish our, and fine. So they're both just, so there's material motive for it. And it's so we're used to that. I do this, therefore, you know, why things aren't going nicely. Either why is it if we're, you know, are contaminated by impersonalism, then it's why everything has not become peaceful. Why my mind is not peaceful. Why there's all these agitations. Right? Because that's what we expect out of spiritual life. Right? Or if we've come from a, you know, non-impersonal background, then it's like, well, where are all the facilities? I've been devotee so long, I've done so much, and why am I not getting all these facilities? You know? So, you know, that's the thing. Then there'll be difficulty. So therefore, then, this becomes a difficulty to deal with. That's just due to our conditioning. So we're conditioned to think that spiritual life is supposed to give a nice material result. You know? And so then if it's not coming, then we think something's wrong. Either there's something wrong with the religion, you know, or there's something wrong with everybody else, or, you know, the philosophy's not right because, you know, something's wrong. But we never think that we're wrong. You know, that's the thing. But we're wrong. Because our conception of spiritual life is not complete. You know, it may be beginning, but we have to cultivate it and take it another step. Because, right? As you mentioned before, these materialist sufferers because they want the result, and they want the result to be good. The spiritualist doesn't suffer because they're not worried if it's a good or bad result. You know, like that. So therefore, That's the key, is that if one is not worried about it, then where's the anxiety? If one's attached to it, that'll be a problem. So, because attachment is natural, that's why then, depending upon one's attachment, one situates oneself in a particular situation, a particular vana or a particular ashram, because then that will situate one where the attachments are being dealt with, so the mind is comfortable for that. But it is a material world, so therefore, by dealing with them in a regulated way, then they'll slowly be able to be given up and will be able to detach. You have something? Yes.
Something materially
favorable
will come to me, but you can also say this question is test, and so our ability to say no to such a thing, that is based purely on sincerity, because if we're sincere, Krishna gives the strength. Or is there any situation that it is so overwhelming that we would not be able to resist, like perhaps a you might be the result of some afterlife.
Yeah, no, that's another thing. It
means that material desire arises very strongly in the heart. Many times that's because of Avara. But otherwise, the thing is Maya's normal thing. Tests are, she's simply trying to test on whether we're actually serious about Krishna. Her business is not to keep us here, just to keep us here. It's that we want to be here, therefore she keeps us here. She keeps us engaged, because if we're here, you have to be busy, otherwise you're going to make trouble, right? If you have a bunch of kids, if you don't keep them busy, they're going to make trouble. So better you keep them busy. So then she keeps us busy with so many material distractions. And then when we say we want Krishna, then she tests that. But she never gives us a test we can't pass. Though, you know, we may have the tendency to not pass it, but she may push the edge, you know. But that opportunity is always there too. We may have gotten overwhelmed, that's understandable. Because we're conditioned to that. We've done it for so long, so many lifetimes. Therefore, we may easily be. But that's why the importance of practice, the Vaidhi Sadhana, is very important. Because then you practice how to control, how to, you know, like that. Then one starts to be able to separate the two. When there's control, then you see the difference. Right? Just like if one eats anytime one wants, anywhere, anything, you know, anyhow, then one doesn't actually understand the difference, you know, how to control eating. But if you put eating that you only eat at certain times and, you know, regulated things and all the, then you start to notice, you know, between eating and not eating, that this regulated life, hey, I get so many things done here and like this. Then when you have your other things like fasting and that, then you figure out you didn't die. You know, so that means actually what my idea of eating and what actually is necessary is two different things. Or it may be necessary, but then we're not attached to it. We learn to not be attached. Whatever Krishna sends, that's what we eat. Not necessarily that whatever I want, that's what I eat. Does that make sense? Yes.
We shouldn't be attached to any situation. We should be just accepted and do the best we can to serve Krishna. But if a situation is not so favorable and it's difficult to serve Krishna in a situation, should we desire a different situation, or should we just say, well, we did the best?
No, we should desire to serve Krishna. And then if we want to serve Krishna, then those situations will come. Because to serve Krishna, then one needs situations in which one can serve Krishna. So better to let Krishna figure out what's good for us, because we don't necessarily know what's good for us. Otherwise, we'll just ask for something else that's going to be a burden. Like that. So the point is this, you know, we have no money, so we go, oh, Krishna, if I had money, then so many things. But then you have money, but then get that money, you have to work so hard, so much time is spent. Like that, and then you have the money, and then you always are in anxiety about the money. You know, as soon as you have money, everybody else wants it. Right? We want money, but everybody else does also. Right? And where are you getting? Where we want money? Where do we get it from? The air? No, we get it from people who have it. So if we have money, then we're on the other side of the wanting of the money, right? So then we find it'll be a difficulty. So the whole point is we want to serve Krishna, and then according to that, the our duties, then certain facilities and certain, you know, requirements are there to do those duties. So we simply, in performance of our duties, make the endeavor to get those things and to maintain and to use those things in Krishna's service. But them coming or not, or having come, them staying or not, that's up to Krishna. Our business is just to do our duties. The results that come and that, then that's up to Krishna. So better to never pray for something other than pure devotional service. We don't see the devotees, means any of the songs of the acharyas, you hear them talking about anything. If I just had more brains, or I had more money, or if I had a house, or do we ever see them talking? No. Because they'll only give you trouble. Whatever you want in the material world, it will give trouble. Because material energy is trouble. So whatever form it's in, it's still trouble. Right? Means if you have a, you know, what do you call it? If you have a very, how do you say, you know, if you have a, you know, an Afghan dog, or you have a pit bull, they're still dogs. You know, one may look better than the other, you know, but still, they're it's trouble. Like that. Does that make sense? So one should try to avoid praying for the, you know, specific facilities. It's better to pray for just pure devotional service and be able to remember the Lord and to have the association of devotees and to always be able to hear and chant and have a taste for the name and these kind of things that we see the acharyas are teaching us to pray for. Then the situations for that will come up, you know, because, you know, if the situation is materially not so nice, but we can always remember Krishna, that's better than a materially nice and not being able to remember Krishna. Right? Maybe for our duty, it might be good if these facilities were there, but ultimately that duty itself is also a temporary activity that we shouldn't get attached to. But we do it as long as that's, you know, required. Does that make sense?
It's very elevated to just think, Krishna, just... because sometimes the situation is very impossible to tolerate, and yeah. You say, oh, well,
But that tolerance... Not being able to tolerate is because of our attachments to something. So if those attachments aren't there, then it's not intolerant. It may be unfavorable for performance of devotional activities, but, you know, but our being materially disturbed by it, that's another thing. Right? So we have to see, means most important, what's favorable for Krishna consciousness. Right? Now within Krishna consciousness, then we have our duties. So what's favorable for our duties? Right? But basically we just are endeavoring for what's favorable for Krishna consciousness. Because the duties, that's temporary. According to the situation, what's good today, tomorrow may not be good. Like that. So that's changing. Also ourselves, we're changing. You know? Like that. So therefore all these situations they are temporary. So it's, you know, how you say, we're in a particular situation, a particular facility is there, it's favorable, we're using it, great. You know, Krishna may keep it there forever, may not. So if he keeps it, then we're to learn from that. If he doesn't keep it, we're to learn from that. In any case, we're supposed to remember him. But we, according to our nature, we endeavor. We should be careful that we're endeavoring within that nature. Otherwise, we're endeavoring outside that nature, then we're doing someone else's work. And that's where Krishna says, better to do your work not so good than someone else's work really good.
Then you should be involved in varnashram.
Basically, that's what varnashram is for, like that. Varnashram and the rules of sadhana bhakti, like that. know, the various aspects of sadhana bhakti. And if one follows, then with time, as one matures and one comes to that neutral platform, then one finds that then naturally then the positive comes is then the spontaneous sadhana bhakti then arises. So when the conditioning is very strong like that and the attention is more on the material energy, then the rules and regulations of the sadhana bhakti are the most important, because it regulates things, and that those, it says, the regulated principles of freedom. So by following those, one becomes free. But there must, freedom's only part of it. Like, there must be attraction, you know, to Krishna. There must be attachment to Krishna. So therefore, then, the other side starts to happen. But it's very difficult to become attractive if there is so many material desires of distraction. Therefore, one tries to free oneself of those distractions so that one may become fortunate and become attractive. Just because the heart is pure doesn't mean you will be attractive. But if the heart is impure, it's very hard to focus on Krishna. Therefore, our endeavor is to, you know, purify yourself by following the principles of devotional activity. That takes care of conditioned nature. But at the same time, the most important thing, that's the secondary duties. The primary duty is how to perform those things that are directly related to Krishna. Chanting his name, preaching about him, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, these things. So that's the main focus, is how to become a devotee of Krishna, how to develop love for Krishna. But because we have the conditioned nature, we perform those activities to get rid of that. You know, so that becomes part of our trying to become attracted to Krishna. So we're doing the activities to attract ourselves to Krishna. If we can do it in 24 hours a day, that's best. But if we can't, then we do these other activities, the varnashram, to engage the control and engage the conditioned nature so that may become purified, so that our efforts in you know, hearing and chanting and remembering become more fruitful. Does that make some sense? Okay. So it's a tool. Varnashram is a tool. You know, it's the most sattvic and subtle and effective of the social, you know, religious tools.
So we're just talking that one of the obstacles to, one of the symptoms of anista bhajan is when there are bad habits, but that can include like irregulation and things because of not following mighty bhajan.
Yeah. Could, and also just be from, you know, bad in the past. You know, one was not overly inclined towards regulation, so therefore then Krishna has arranged it now that you have a tendency towards irregulation. You know? Just like if one doesn't like to do things, he doesn't like to work, he could work, but he doesn't like to work, then in the future you might find yourself in a situation where by nature you're lazy. That's your habit. Then it's more difficult. You wanted it, so Krishna gave it. So then you have to endeavor to overcome that. So it's quite complex. If it wasn't complex, it wouldn't have kept us busy for so long. Right? You know, like a game, if it's too simple, you figure it out and get bored of it. But if it's really complex, it takes much longer. So this is like the, you know, the ultimate game. The ultimate virtual reality game. And it's just taken, you know, unlimited time to get to the point that we're starting to get sick of it. You know, we don't want to play anymore. We want to go home. Like that. Any sense? Anything else? Yeah.
If one ashram system is meant to, if one ashram system is meant to elevate our consciousness to become a pure devotee, then why there is one ashram in the spiritual realm?
It means, where are you trying to go from here? It means you're in the material world. Where are you trying to get to?
To the spirit.
Okay. And then what are you going to do in the spiritual world?
Serve.
How are you going to serve? It means just...
As a person.
Yeah, and are you going to interact with other persons?
Right.
Okay. And is that interaction going to be based on with Krishna as the center? So what is the form of that interaction going to look like? You understand? You're an individual who is always thinking of Krishna, and another person's a devotee who's always thinking of Krishna. What's your interaction? Or what's your interaction with Krishna? Right? What's it going to be based upon? Right? You understand? Just like you now, how do you socially relate in the society? Right? What are things you have to consider in relationship? You understand?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like you go into a courtyard and there's, let's say there's a 3-year-old kid. Right? How are you going to relate to that child? You're going to come up and shake their hand and, you know, start talking all kinds of serious things, or... Right? You understand? Means you have a nature and the child has a nature. So depending upon that, that's going to create the relationship. Right? So this nature that we had is based on false ego, false understanding. Or in the spiritual world, it's based on one's relationship with Krishna. So depending upon our relationship with Krishna, we're going to deal with another devotee in their relationship with Krishna. That will be what will govern it, is our particular relationship with Krishna. So that is called, that's rasa. Right? So then rasa has a form in which it is done that pleases Krishna. Right? So that is reflected into the material world. And here it's called varnasha. But there it's based on rasa. Right? Here it's based on what the body we have. Okay, a man's body does these duties. A Brahmin does these duties. Kshatriya that duties. A Grihastha this duty. Right? Because here, the rasa is temporary and every lifetime is changing, and within the lifetime, all these things are, it's all temporary. So the rules have to be there because we don't know them. It's not our natural, spontaneous nature. Right? So when we're in this, then we learn how to behave within this particular situation. And in this situation, how you deal. Brahman, how does he deal with a Kshatriya? How does he deal with a Vaishya? How does an old man deal with a young man? Or a young man with a teacher? Or the teacher with the king? Or, you know, all these different things. Right? You have to be trained, because it's not spontaneous. But in the spiritual world, the situation is eternal, because that is your rasa, that is you. The form you have is you, right? The relationship you have, the mentality, everything you have is you. So that's eternal, and that's coming spontaneously, coming from the heart. So therefore, it just naturally is happening. So therefore, there you don't have to have, you know, they don't have to go to Gurukul and learn, you know, how to do the different things. Right? They learn the fineness of it from, you know, the leaders in their particular rasa. You know, they learn how to better perform their duties, their relationship with Krishna. Right? But here, you have to be trained in it, so there must be a formalized code and everything like that so you can get trained, because this lifetime it's one thing, next lifetime it's something else. So one has to be trained. And then within the Varnashram, then it's more easy to relate, because you're relating. It's easier to relate. You know, it's because it's very similar to the spiritual, but it's not. It's not, because in the spiritual, then Krishna is the center. Well, here we're the center. Though it has the mood of service and that respect of so many different things, but still, it's based around our false identity. So it's different. So it's not that, why do they have Varnashram here? Varnashram is a reflection of what goes on there. You know? That would be like saying, you see the reflection in the water of the tree, and you say, well, this is all illusion, so then how come the real tree has bark and leaves and this and that? Right? That's the impersonalist idea, is that if material is this, then spiritual can't be that. If here there's form, spiritual means no form. Right? Like that. If here there's relationships, spiritual means no relationships. Yeah. So we have to be careful of these things. Okay. Is that the spiritual realm, that's the actual place, that's the real culture. And so then we need to learn to become cultured like that. It means the spiritual culture is so wonderful that the demigods like to associate with the devotee, because their culture is higher than, means the devotee's culture is higher than the demigod's culture. They may be situated in goodness, but they have all material desire. Well, the devotee is beyond, he's in pure goodness, so therefore so much more wonderful their behavior. Right? Arjuna's here as a king, Duryodhana can't stand him, but Indra is very happy to have him come. And he sits on his throne. Anybody else sits on Indra's throne? No. So he has all nice qualities. You know, of course, maybe influenced by, you know, that it was his son. But point was, he had good qualities. And nobody there is complaining why Arjuna is sitting there. No, everybody is happy with his qualities. You understand? So it's not that this is a standard, how come theirs like that? No, that's the standard, and this is just a reflection. So the Varnashram is one of the tools that is used to get out. Right? But only if it's used in connection with Krishna. If it's not used in connection with Krishna, it's useless. Varnashram for Varnashram's sake is useless. Right? Just like all the rules of puja, they're useless if they're not connected to Krishna. The smartest follow that, the impersonalists follow, they all do deity worship, they all are initiated into mantras, they all chant japa, they all put on tilak, they all do all these things. Right? Because these things help free you from material contamination and purify you, elevate you. So therefore, we follow them also. Right? Or we can say is, we're following them, and since that's also their interest, they follow them also. Does that make sense? Like that. So we just have to turn where, what is the standard? Anything else? Yes.
More question. How you would answer a question like that? Somebody would say that when we're going to get liberated or get in the spiritual world, we just sit down in one corner of the spiritual world and chant Hare Krishna, not talk to anybody. That's for us liberation.
Well, let's see him try it right now. But that's an impersonal concept. It'll just be themselves. Point is the spiritual world, it's a material concept, it's not a spiritual concept. Because Krishna is a person and the material world is full of people. So therefore, you know, we have to learn to be able to deal with people. So that means we first have to accept ourselves as a person. right? And that means, who are we? Are we this body or are we the soul? So we have to be able to distinguish between them. And since we're not the body, we're not the gross and subtle body, therefore we have to learn to be able to detach ourselves from them. Work with them, but detach yourself from them. I mean, it's just like, let us say someone put on their dhoti every day. How long will it take to put on this special dhoti? Will it take 45 seconds? Yes? No? No. Take a lot longer. Right? Now, every day we go out, we go to the temple, we offer our obeisances, you know, we sit down, we chant, we do all these different things. And, you know, focus on those activities of sadhana. Now, wearing this special dhoti, will we be able to just offer obeisances anywhere? No, we'll always be looking, will my dhoti get dirty? Can we just sit anywhere? No, you know, then this and it'll get crumpled and this. So we can't even act normally, right? So that's the point. As long as we think we're the gross and subtle body, we don't act normal. We act very weird. So only those who are detached from the gross and subtle body, they act normally. Right? Therefore we see Srila Prabhupada, he was the normal person. He was the most normal. Everybody else is crazy. Everybody else is weird because they think they're the body, so they're so worried about this, that. He can just go through very nicely. It doesn't mean that it's neglected, but it's balanced, it's just in its own place. How much has to be put? Only that much. It takes 45 seconds to put on the dhoti. That's all it takes. It doesn't take 5 minutes because, you know, each fold you have to, you know, just do just right. And no. It only takes, only 45 seconds. Not 5 minutes, only 45 seconds. You understand? So that's the thing, is that whatever the situation in life is, whatever varna, ashram, whatever the facility, that how much time it takes to do that, that's how much is put. Nothing more, nothing less. It's done properly, but it's not overdone. It's not overdone. It's just done how much it has to be done, and that's all it does. Right, you see, if someone's expert, they can do something really well in less time. Someone's not so expert, it takes a longer time. So that's the thing. So someone who has to spend so much time in material endeavor means they're not so expert.
Also, I mean, they haven't understood the principles behind what they make.
Yeah, would be. Wouldn't be. Or they have a lot of material desire, so they're trying to become experts at quite a lot, you know, more than necessary. But otherwise, then it's not. You know, just how much has to be done, that's all. Anything else? Okay, let's go ahead here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaritala Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur. Oh.